Boy, so many things to talk about. Gee, where do we start? First of all, we had a big Supreme Court case, U.S. versus McGirt, and that's going to change the landscape of how law enforcement and the courts operate in the state of Oklahoma for the most part. And how does this affect Cherokee Nation?
Well, just to give some context, Cherokee Nation's been a part of a lot of monumental cases in the history of the Indian law in this country. You'd have to go back to the 19th century to cases that predated our removal that really were are the pillars still of tribal sovereignty to find a case that's this monumental. What this case was precisely was about the Creek Nation and its reservation. But the Creeks, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Cherokee, and the Seminole, what's known as the five tribes in Oklahoma, five of the largest tribes in the country, Cherokee Nation being the largest, we have substantially similar or really identical treaties in all relevant respects, and that is with respect to how our territory was promised to us and laid out before, right after removal, certainly before Oklahoma statehood. The issue is whether that was disestablished, as the law says, by acts of Congress, including the creation of the state of Oklahoma and other statutes that diminished sort of the way our governments functioned for most of the 20th century. At issue in McGirt was a criminal defendant who asserted that he was an Indian, that his crime, alleged crime, well, it was a proven crime in state court, took place in Creek country. In other words, every square inch of what you see on the map, including most of the city of Tulsa, is Creek Nation. And therefore, the state of Oklahoma, through the DA, did not have the authority to prosecute him. The Supreme Court agreed, and they agreed because they said Congress never disestablished the Creek Reservation, and as I mentioned, since the treaties are substantially identical in all relevant respects, that applies to all five tribes, including the Cherokee Nation, or it can apply by extension. The sky's not falling, but it does represent a dramatic shift in law enforcement, because now if you are an Indian, a Native American, and you allegedly commit a crime in really half of Oklahoma, then the law enforcement responsibilities under something called the Major Crimes Act falls to the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office, which is not primarily the place that you see prosecuting crimes throughout states. They're prosecuting a lot of crimes, but not the crimes that you see every day on the nightly news or every evening on the nightly news. The tribes also have a role. We also have the ability to prosecute. We have limits on how much prison time we can met out, for example. But in any case, that's the shift. I expect Congress to respond. But that's an earful for me, Tom. But that's a kind of in it in a nutshell.
Now, we've got a lot of other things that are happening, too. A certain football team in Washington, D.C. is going to change its name. I want to get your comment on that.
Well, I'm glad to see it. I mean, the Redskins name is, in my view and the view of many other people, both tribal leaders and outside of Indian nations, a racial slur that's been allowed to be a name for too long. Some folks say, well, why does it matter? It's tradition. I've gotten a few emails saying, hey, this is messing with tradition. And I get that. I'm a football fan. And when you grow up a football fan, you grow up appreciating your team's a tradition. Sometimes you associate it with your family because you watch football together, and that's very important. I don't want to diminish that, but I think Indian nations and members of tribes know a little something about losing traditions. And if you look back over the centuries, we've lost a great deal. Part of the reason we lost it is because our traditions, our cultures were misappropriated by others. They were used, in this case, as a mascot, as a name that has offensive roots, and I think still offends today. And I think in 2020, it's perfectly fine to have conversations about whether these things that are traditions in a sense, should they trump what is a long history of, again, misappropriation of Native culture and really things that I think about are young Natives growing up. Well, how do they think of themselves? If they see Chief Wahoo from the Cleveland Indians, does that diminish how they view themselves as a Native American? There's some studies out there that suggest that it does. But in any case, I think the change is overdue, and I'm glad to see it.
We're speaking with Principal Chief of Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskin, Jr., right here on our Community Connection Program. I'm Tom Davis, and a few other things going on today. We have a neat little thing with COVID relief. I understand that you've got quite a substantial education initiative that you're quite proud of.
We do. So we worked hard to get federal funding from the government of the United States to respond and recover from COVID. Now, a lot of that's going to preparing our public spaces, whether it's our office buildings or our businesses, to make sure they're safe for people. That's good for all of Northeast Oklahoma because thousands and thousands of people either work for us or enter our buildings, and we want them to be safe. We also want our health centers to be prepared for what is a pandemic that is not going away. It is still very much here. We expect it to be here for the rest of the year at least in terms of a vaccine. But we also need to recover, and part of recovering is helping our people, and one of the high priorities is education. And so what we've done is we've committed $40 million to a couple of different education initiatives. So first, every Cherokee kid, doesn't matter if you live in Tahlequah or Tallahassee, doesn't matter where you live in the country, if you're a Cherokee kid age 5 to 18, we're going to, there's an application you can fill out. If you're impacted by COVID, which frankly I think we all are, then you get a $400 tech stipend. Because the landscape of education is changing, a lot of schools are going virtual, at least partially virtual. And so being able to have some funds to improve your connectivity or get some software or even a device in some cases could mean the difference between a student failing or succeeding. And that's available nationwide. There's no income limit on that, Tom. And so it doesn't matter where you live or what your household income is or even how you get your schooling, private school, homeschool, public school. We're going to be there for those students. We're also for those students residing in Cherokee Nation. That's our 14 counties, what the Supreme Court's calling our reservation now, and I'll call it that too. That if you live there, you also get a clothing voucher. Low income will get 300. Those above the low income threshold will get 150. That's some additional help. We're going to send applications to about 107 school districts, Tom, giving them an opportunity to write a grant for up to $10,000 so they can help prepare for COVID. I'm telling you, one of the things that sometimes keeps me up at night is what are we going to do about the schools? We have a school ourselves at Cherokee Nation, Sequoia High School, but I know these schools need resources, and I know that affects our kids, it affects our community, so we're sending them an opportunity to get a grant to do things like get temperature tech stations or PPEs that they may need or technology that they may need. So that's another aspect of it. We're going to give some additional funds to our college scholarship recipients, another tech grant for those who get our college scholarship so they can deal with what life is like getting a college degree in this pandemic. So that's just a few of the aspects of our $40 million education initiative.
We're talking with Principal Chief of Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskin, Jr. We've been talking a lot about COVID here today, and for good reason. We're starting to see numbers kind of do funny things. It looked like we had everything beat back. We get some spikes, and then they go down again. And really, nobody knows where this is going. But you're prepared for the schools. And what about the working climate? How are we doing now with the casinos reopening, and how is that coming along? I know that you went to the nth degree to ensure people's safety.
Right. Yeah, I think so far so good. We've not had major incidents in terms of outbreaks at our casinos, or either through our customer base or our staff. We've kept people safe, and we want to lead the industry now, not in revenue, not in anything else. We want to lead the industry in safety and protection. And I think we're doing that. And I think as a result, people have been safe. Now, I'm going to level with you, Tom. Nobody knows what the future is. This virus isn't done until it's done with us. Wow. And so we're going to keep an eye on the numbers. And look, if the numbers get out of whack, and I don't like the direction they're going, we will make different decisions about all of our operations, whether it's gaming facilities, mm-hmm. whether it's our government offices. But so far, very proud of the work of Cherokee Nation businesses, our business arm, and proud of our government side in terms of preparedness. So I feel good. I feel good that our workforce is walking into the safest place in the industry when they come into those facilities.
That's great. It's great to hear you taking all kinds of precaution and being proactive on this. You got a big event coming up. It happens every September. How are plans for that coming along with COVID possibly in the mix?
Well, they're going to change greatly, and you've been to this event before, as I recall, Tom. And
a few times,
that it's a big event. 100,000 people descend on Tahlequah. They come from all over the region and even all over the country. Sometimes we have international visitors. And so when we looked at that, we thought this is an opportunity for a super spreader event for the capital of the Cherokee Nation, and then it spreads out to our communities, and then the celebration we love becomes something that it cripples us in a very real way, or at least potentially. So we're basically going all virtual. We're working on those plans now. You know, people will be able to access some of the things they love about the holiday, whether it's the intertribal powwow. We've got an interesting idea concerning that. Hard to do a powwow virtually, but we'll figure it out. And opportunities to look at some of the great art that is produced for the holiday and sold at the holiday, and give artists an opportunity to purchase it. Some of the things, I give a State of the Nation address. Of course, we'll do that virtually. Our royalty competition, youth leadership for Miss Cherokee, Junior Miss Cherokee, those will go on in a virtual setting. We're going to have a drive-in theater that we are creating so we can play some of the great offerings we have, such as our OCO TV. We might premiere some OCO TV content. That's our Emmy-winning show. Mm-hmm. Other things that we might put on there concerning art, some of the advancements the Cherokee Nation has made. So there's going to be something for everyone. It just won't be people mingling next to each other, because it's just not safe to do so.
Are we going to keep the museum open and the Heritage Center open for that weekend?
Well, we're pushing the opening of those entities to August. We were going to open them in July, and there's an example, Tom, of us shifting gears based on the numbers. We pushed the opening to August from July because we weren't comfortable with the numbers.
Gotcha.
So they will be open in that time frame, but I don't expect that we will have necessarily weekend hours, because I think what we're going to see that weekend in Tahlequah is what we've seen in recent weekends, which is a lot of people, Tom, and that's probably true all over Northeast Oklahoma. People are eager to get out, enjoy the summer. There's a lot of things to do in the Tahlequah region in the summer, but there's lots of people, and I think that's part of the danger that we're seeing, and the risk is that we have people that, frankly, too many people in too small spaces, and it worries me, Tom, and so we're not going to do much to encourage that here in our capital.
Very good. It's good to know what's lying ahead here, and it's great to know that you're monitoring the situation and acting accordingly. We're speaking with the Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin, Jr., with Cherokee Nation. The lawsuits with the governor and the state of Oklahoma, how are those moving along? Last I checked, there was supposed to be some sort of a mediator, and that was back in March, and then COVID hit, and I kind of lost track.
Well, the mediation went along, and you know, even though we can't talk about what happens in mediation, I can tell you that mediation appears to be effectively over in terms of the effort. We're always willing to talk, of course, but in terms of that phase of the litigation, there have been some briefs filed in that regard. That litigation, though, is still pending. The core question, whether the compacts renewed or terminated, we think they renewed. The governor said they terminated. We'll see what the judge says. We feel very confident. There's been some other action, though. The governor has signed compacts with other tribes that we feel are illegal. It's not just the opinion of the chief of the Cherokee Nation, though. You could ask the leaders of the Oklahoma legislature what they think, or just look at the briefs they filed, because they've also said, look, this is illegal, and they've taken him to task, really on a separation of powers type issue and appropriate role of the executive. So, unfortunately, that's still a dispute. It's the only way I could characterize it. Gaming continues, of course. We're doing it, as I mentioned earlier, in the safest manner possible. We'll have to see how the litigation plays out. We've always felt good about our position. Ultimately, the same goal I had when I took office is the goal I have now, which is a compact that is good for all 4 million Oklahomans. And if it continues like it is, it's going to be great for all 4 million Oklahomans, because the compact's been a winner for this state.
Chief, you're coming up on your first year anniversary, aren't you?
I am indeed.
Yeah. How would you describe this year other than, challenging?
Well, I'd struggle to find a word other than challenging, but I've loved every minute of it, even the ones that were, even the moments that were probably the most, gave me the most heartburn, so to speak, and one of which is seeing the numbers climb up and making decisions concerning closing casinos and keeping people with paychecks, and then dealing with the governor who, look, he and I got years left in office, and there's still time for us to improve the relationship. But we've got to get past the compact. But I've loved every minute of it, Tom. And then I got to tell you, just to kind of circle back to where we began, to in my term in office, and it wasn't because I did it. I just happened to be chief of the Cherokee Nation at the time this decision came out. I got into the details on the McGirt case earlier, but the overarching issue is this, Tom. More than a century ago, the government of the United States made us a promise of 180 years ago. That promise, the United States Supreme Court said, you have to keep it. It told the government of the United States, you have to keep it. Leaders have been saying that for a long time, tribal leaders. I've said it during my term in office. I said it when I went to Washington, D.C. to urge them to seat Kim Teehee as the delegate under our treaty. To hear the United States Supreme Court say that same thing, that same idea that the United States ought to keep its word, that's great for me to hear as chief. So I'm telling you, that was a great day for me. I'm going to carry that through the rest of my term, and I'm going to make sure that I echo that when I visit with people that represent the government of the United States.
Very well. How are we coming along with the seating a delegate in Congress?
Well, the Supreme Court case, while not precisely on that issue, is a big boost. I talked to a member of Congress yesterday who actually called to congratulate the tribes on that win, and I said, it's great, and I said, when I come back to Washington, D.C., and someday it'll be safe to travel again, I said, expect to hear me say that the United States Supreme Court says the government, when it makes a promise in a treaty, ought to keep its word. I said, and that's what this delegate seating is about, so I'm eager to get back to the business of getting Kim Teehee seated. It's been interrupted by COVID, as so much has been, but we were making good progress before the pandemic hit. We'll pick that up again as we're able to travel, but even before we travel, now that I think the country can focus on some things other than COVID 24/7, even if that's the most important thing, I think we can work in some opportunities to start engaging members of Congress again. A couple weeks ago, I spoke again to Congressman Mullen about it. He remains someone who, as a Cherokee and as a member of Congress, is very supportive of this idea. We just need to find the right way to get it done.
And, of course, the other businesses that Cherokee Nation is a part of and sponsors have been doing quite well, as we mentioned. Another thing that took place during your brief tenure, your first year, is the Historic Acts. And that got interrupted a little bit by COVID, but how's that coming along?
It's coming along good. I think finally we're going to get a list in front of the Council of the Cherokee Nation. Now, we make the selections here over the executive branch, but we send it over to the council for comment. And we're sending a list that's bigger than the one we started with over to the council for its review and comment. This month is the plan. And so that means that list will be public finally. And we'll get that over to you, Tom. I appreciate you asking that when we come on the program. It's one way to move towards historic preservation of these sites is to identify them and show the public that they're revered, and then make a plan, and that's the next step, make a plan to invest in them, and we still have to do that.
Chief Hoskin, thank you very much for being a part of our broadcast today, and as always, look forward to speaking with you again next month, if not sooner.
Okay, thank you, my friend.
All right, thank you very much. We've been speaking with the Principal Chief of Cherokee Nation, Chief Chuck Hoskin, Jr., right here on K1, the one you trust.